Greetings, my friend. This is the brain of TV's Pinky in the Brain. And you are listening to the Nerdcast. But what you're really listening to are subliminal messages saying, I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. I will obey brain. Yes!
Welcome, everybody, to the Nerdcast episode 142 with Adam, Tyler, and myself, Iggy. We're here for a fun-filled week full of Blade Runner, Star Wars trailers, and really, I mean, do we need anything else? But there is a lot more, too. So what's up, guys?
Not much, man. You're going to be super disappointed in me because I didn't see Blade Runner and I didn't watch the Star Wars trailer. I don't know what to tell you.
What have you been doing with your life?
Well, I don't know. Like, I mean, you guys know me in trailers. If I'm going to see the movie, I don't watch the trailers. Like, once I'm on board, I don't need to watch the trailer. I'm going to see it already.
No, if you skip the Star Wars trailer, so for everybody, obviously the Star Wars trailer dropped on Monday, just during, I guess, Monday Night Football, right? About halftime or something. It came online. I wasn't going to watch it too. I was going to follow Adam's lead on this one because I'm like, nah. But I could only last a few minutes before I finally played it. It was everywhere. I went to ESPN.com to look at the baseball scores, and the trailer was posted on ESPN. So I was like, okay, if it's on ESPN, I guess like at this point, I've got to watch it. It's everywhere. And I watched it. And I'm going to be honest, I feel like they're giving you a lot of information. And I know people's retort already was that it was cleverly edited, which I do agree that's a possibility. But I still feel like it gives you a lot of what's going on between Rey and Luke and a lot of motives for Kylo Ren.
Yeah, I don't know. My first response was just kind of underwhelming. I think partly just because now we've had two Star Wars movies within the last couple of years. Like, I remember when the last Force Awakens trailer dropped, like it was affecting. Like, I was so excited. This one was kind of like, all right, cool. I mean, I was going to see it anyway, but you can definitely tell that someone in marketing went ham with the editing to make it seem as dramatic and to create as many real and or false plot points in everyone's head as humanly possible. The only thing about it I didn't like is there's definitely a scene with Chewie that looks 100% CGI, and I don't understand why. Chewie's always been a big guy in a suit. I don't know what's going on there. That was upsetting.
Is that the scene with Chewie and what's it, the Porg?
Whatever it is. Yeah.
Everybody's obsessing over it now. The little creature. I would have to find the website. So sorry to not crediting the proper website for this. But there's probably multiple doing it. But there's one having a Photoshop contest with the Porg, and it's actually the best part of the Porg. But I don't know. It's definitely addition of trying to add more cute characters to put probably more merchandise out there. But I would, Tyler, a good point. I didn't feel as enamored as I did with the Force Awakens trailers. And it's probably because, like you said, because the Force Awakens, we had waited, 20 years since, I mean, our last Star Wars. And now
it can't have been that long.
Oh, no, it was about 15 years, long. I guess.
It's an exaggeration, yeah.
It feels like 20 years.
Because Revenge of the Sith would have been 2005, 2004, 2005.
Somewhere around there.
So, I mean, we waited 10 years. I mean, that's reasonable. But
it feels, so 10 years in Star Wars years is 20 years. So it feels like 20 years when you're referencing Star Wars. But yeah, anyways, we'd waited a while. We'll just go with that. And now we're getting it. But I mean, there's some cool stuff going on. Again, there's a lot. So if you are worried about spoilers or even, like Tyler said, developing your own plot points from possible spoilers or clever editing, avoid the trailer. But however, at this point, it's Friday. Trailer came out on Monday. You've already made that decision. So anyways, we just dove right in the Star Wars trailer there, which it's exciting because it is Star Wars. It was funny because when the trailer dropped, I was wearing my Star Wars shirt and I got, you know, my new Star Wars tattoo and everything. It was kind of like, Star Wars, like, is everybody really that excited for Star Wars? I'm not so excited, but I am. So did you guys get your tickets for opening night?
I do indeed have my tickets. I'm not going to the first show, and I'm going to like a late one at like 10:30 on Thursday, but I'm seeing it in IMAX, so that should be good. I feel bad because I was seeing Blade Runner for the second time last night, and Blade Runner started almost exactly the same time as the Monday Night Football game is, so I may or may not have committed a cardinal sin and turned on my phone and bought the Star Wars tickets while in the theater watching Blade Runner.
For shame. For shame, bro.
I feel like
it was better than that.
I feel like it was acceptable for two reasons. Number one, it's the second time I was seeing it, and everyone I was with was seeing it for the second time as well. And it wasn't very full. And it was like a Monday night showing. It wasn't like I'd gone on like Thursday night to Blade Runner in a packed crowd and was like on my phone. So, and I feel if anyone had asked, I'd be like, dude, I'm buying my tickets for Star Wars opening night. Everyone in the room with me watching Blade Runner would have been like, oh, okay, cool, that's fine.
And they would have been like, taking out their phones and bought exactly. tickets.
They'd have been like, oh, yeah, crap, forgot about that. So, Adam, did you get your tickets for opening night?
Nope.
Probably don't. Probably maybe not a big fight there. I don't know. The last 2 years for the Star Wars movies, there's a theater by me that's, I call it the poor man's draft house. It's the Cinnabar. It does its job. We'll say that. It's a good theater, but it's never, never crowded, even on opening nights for things. So the last 2 years, I haven't bought my tickets ahead of time, and I've been just fine getting in the Star Wars movie. For The Force Awakens, we stood in line for a little bit after we had the ticket. Because it was, there's no seats, there's no reserved seats at this theater, but I'm not too worried about it. I don't know. It's coming out. We got what? Gosh, two and a half months. I'm not going to go with any more time things because I obviously don't have my time figured out here. So it's coming out in what, 20 years? So I don't know. But anyways. So yeah, Star Wars, big Star Wars week trailer. Let us know what you think, obviously, in the comments. And of course, the tickets now available. So go buy your tickets if you do want to get them ahead of time. I'm sure there are certain locations, theaters selling out. So,
oh yeah, I'm going to get mine. I wasn't going to go, probably not going to go opening night anyway. And so I didn't feel the need to rush out, you know, to jam up a website anymore to buy a ticket for Friday. Like, I feel like I'm going to be able to get Friday tickets pretty easily.
Adam, Tyler and I are going to name this episode 142, The Intervention. We're a little worried. you haven't seen Blade Runner yet. This is Blade Runner, and you're not going to go opening night to Star Wars.
I know. It's
we need to pause the recording and have some heart to heart here for a little bit or something.
Well, I mean, so we moved recently, and my theater is my new theater. The theater in the city I live in now is not run by Carmike anymore, which makes me excited. The last two cities I've lived in have had singular movie theater, and it's been run by Carmike, and they've been horrible experiences pretty much both places. You know, to the point of, hey, some of the movie I can see is hitting the ceiling tiles up here before it goes really high. So it's not all on the screen. Like, oh, what theater are you in? Theater 10? Yeah, that happens sometimes. It'll be fine. Well, no. My movie's not all on the screen. That's not okay. But all right, whatever, I guess. We'll like roll with that.
That'll be fine. It'll be all right. It'll come back on the screen in a little bit.
It's like, what? No. Okay. But anyway, my new theater is very nice and has it's Cinemark. So they do an XD, which is not quite IMAX. But, you know, it's got the special screen. It's acoustically neutral. Or whatever, so they got speakers behind it. You got multiple rows of speakers all the way down the side and across the back. Like it the sound is phenomenal. The picture looks great. And so, really, what I want is to watch it on that screen in particular. So I'm more interested in getting the right screen than the right time. Because for me, it's, you know, that it really does improve the. I don't have a draft house, so I got to make do with what I can make do with. And it, you know, I think it makes a better movie going experience. So I'm more focused on that screen than 7 PM or whatever it's going to be Thursday night.
I don't know what to say here. I don't know. It's still the intervention.
Does it not bother you how many people have seen it before you? Like how many people are getting Star Wars before you're getting Star Wars? I feel like that should bother you.
No. It Maybe. I'll probably end up with tickets for Thursday night. I don't know.
There we go. We've done our job.
I didn't want to fight. I don't like people who know me know that I'm not a big fan of crowds. I don't like being around lots of crowds. I don't being around lots of people.
But going to Star Wars on opening night.
I didn't even want to fight a virtual crowd to buy tickets is really what it was getting at.
Okay. Cool.
I mean, I'm actually a little bit disappointed in myself for going and seeing it at 10:30 instead of like 7. But I'm going with a big group, so we wanted to make sure everyone would be able to get off work and everything like that. So
that's totally acceptable.
Here's the thing, and like this is obviously something we need to talk about. We're going to talk about it at length, but Adam has failed us miserably. But no matter how good it is, and even though it's Star Wars, and it hurts me to say this, everything that comes after Blade Runner this year is just going to be a disappointment because it won't be Blade Runner 2049.
We're going to dive into that, and we're going to have to do it. I was going to say this is going to be a spoiler-filled episode, but now it's going to be spoiler-free because Adam loves Blade Runner so much, we can't ruin it for him. So
You're welcome, podcast.
We will wait. We will wait to get into that much detail, but I have a feeling Tyler and I still will have plenty of things to say about Blade Runner, but I want to save that for a little bit. I can't believe you haven't seen Blade. Like, I can't get over that. Like, I don't know what to say here. I'm a loss for words. It's Adam of all people.
Like, I know. In the past 8 months, I've probably seen more movies opening weekend than definitely the Niggy.
Probably
Tyler. And maybe the two of you put together, because I watch a lot of movies that you guys wouldn't go see opening weekend. I'm a little bummed, but things happen. The world's a malleable place. I'm learning to be flexible within that world.
Now I'm two out of the last 3 weeks. I saw Kingsman opening weekend, and now I've seen Blade Runner opening weekend. And
I've got doing that movie pass, buddy.
I bought my Kingsman ticket. I didn't have my movie pass by then, but I wasn't going to miss Kingsman, the sequel. And Blade Runner, I was going to buy the ticket either way, but the movie pass showed up that day, luckily. So I was like, woohoo! So I was enabling my movie pass credit card while in the parking lot of the theater with like 15 minutes to go. And I'm like, come on, don't hesitate. And of course, like somehow I get close to the movie theater and my phone signal drops to like no bars. And I'm like, are you kidding me right now? Are you kidding me? So luckily it worked. I was able to do it. Sound investment already. It's already paid off. It saved me $2.50 so far this month. And I still have a lot to see. So I'm pretty excited. By the time this airs, I hope to have also seen The Mountain Between Us, which looks kind of interesting. And also had a strong opening, I'd say. Not quite a Blade Runner opening, but a strong opening for sure. But speaking of, let's go into that. Some box office numbers there. Looks like Blade Runner took the weekend there. Somewhere around $35 million right in that area, I think, right?
32.7. So yeah, I would say a little light.
It's kind of a big letdown because, like, after Thursday, Friday, it was trending for 50 and then just fell off a cliff on Saturday and Sunday. Like, the pre-sale, like, the early, like, midnight release, like, the Thursday, Friday numbers were really strong, and then it was trending for, like, 50-ish and then fell all the way to 35, which, like, for I will say, as someone who loves all the Blade Runner movies, has seen, you know, owns the poster, I love them. It's definitely not a movie for everyone, and I know people who have seen it who are like, I don't get it. I didn't think it was very good. But as wrong as those people may or may not be, it's not a movie for everyone. And I'm happy and at the same time concerned that they went to the trouble to spend $150 million on basically a big old piece of art that's not for everyone, and it's not going to – I mean, it's going to make its money back, and it's going to be successful, but it's not going to make – $150 million budget blockbuster money.
That kind of goes back to our conversation a couple weeks ago about the spending by movie studios. But yeah, 32.7. In at number two was Mountain Between Us, which opened up at 10.5. It still strong. Number three at 9.9. And its total gross right now is $305 million. That's for a horror movie, a rated R horror movie, guys. And then, of course,
a rated R horror movie with a budget of $35 million. Good God.
It's still making one third of it. What is this? What week are we in? Five? Yeah, the fifth week, and it's still making a third of its budget in just the weekend. But My Little Pony, the movie, and Kingsman rounding out the top five. My Little Pony also was one of the big openers. So interesting things. After the light opening from Blade Runner, the studio did come out and say they did overestimate a little bit because they were thinking bigger numbers as well. And they're like, we realize now this is a narrower audience than we anticipated. So I've been watching, I don't watch a lot of TV, so I don't normally see a lot of commercials, but I've been watching a lot of TV lately because it's October baseball season right now. It's time for some playoff baseball. And a lot of Blade Runner commercials happening there, touting it. Monday during the game, the Astros game was touting it as number one over the weekend. Come see it. So they're still pushing a lot into the advertising budget, that's for sure.
Well, and I think it was always going to be one of those movies that had legs, that word of mouth and certainly the advert, you know, the post-release advertising of, you know, what all the critics are saying and, you know, the Metascores and all that kind of stuff, because they're all insanely high. It's got like an 8.5 Metacritic or something like that, which is crazy. Certified fresh on Rotten Tomatoes, so you get all those things. I think it's one of those that will not have as steep a drop-off as we're used to seeing, that 50% range. I think it'll probably be a little higher than that. I think it sticks around for a little bit, especially as people see it and tell their friends, oh yeah, you're going to want to see that. It was really good. Or Gosling does amazing. Harrison Ford's always fantastic. You know, whatever their reasoning for it might be, that'll extend it past the, like I said, this probably the slightly narrower audience than they were expecting.
Yeah. Well, and I know a lot of people, I've talked to multiple people who are waiting to see it until they have watched the original, which I'm upset with all of them for being 2017. They've never seen Blade Runner. Like, that's a poor decision on their part. Like, and there's nothing I can do about that. On the upside, I have managed to keep all of them. I've saved as many as I can from making the mistake, because on some websites, it's only available in the theatrical cut. So I caught my friend, a friend of mine at work today. I was talking to him about it. He's like, I haven't seen it yet. He's like, he's seen the original years ago, but he's going to have his girlfriend watch it before they go see it together. And he was about to go home and watch the theatrical cut. And I put a kibosh on that in a big way and said, no, do this. But like, if on like on iTunes, I know that only the theatrical cut's available. On Amazon, you can buy digitally the final cut, but it's like not the norm. You have to go like a weird route to get it. You can't just search it, which is super annoying. But I know a lot of people are waiting. I have another friend of mine who's another employee of mine who's going to watch. He's going to a friend's house tonight to watch the original. A lot of people just have never seen the original. Like, I know that if you're a big movie buff or a big sci-fi buff, you saw it, or if you were alive during that time. But I mean, people forget, like, it came out 35 years ago. Like, it is a 35-year-old movie. So there's an entire generation of people who I think this movie is aimed at who have never seen the original. And like, here's the thing, I can say I saw it last night with a group of, how many of us were there? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I saw a group of 5 people. 2 of them had never seen the original before. And there's a couple scenes that are very like, it's not like they make significantly more sense if you've seen the original, but it isn't necessary to see the original to enjoy this one. Like, there's a couple cameos and there's a couple scenes that harken back to the old one, but not in a way that's like, it wouldn't make sense if you hadn't seen it. So.
Yes. And thanks for the reminder. I just threw my copy on the couch because I have to take it to a coworker as well who hasn't seen it and was waiting.
Okay. I was wondering what you were doing with that. I'm like, wait, who does Iggy know that he hasn't seen this movie?
A coworker, the guy I share the office with, has not seen the original. And I told him, I gave him those instructions too, Tyler. I said, I'm going to give you a set that has 5 versions of the movie. So what I want you to do is to watch the final cut. And then I want you to just sample like the original theatrical cut, because I want you to see the difference with the narration and everything, but you need to watch the final cut. And I think, since we're already going into it, we'll talk a little bit about it, but I think this cut definitely goes more in line with the final cut as opposed to the theatrical cut. I feel like it has that same tone, would you say, Tyler?
Yeah, and no. I mean, this is, the tone of this one is very different. Like, it's still very much Blade Runner, very much plays off and builds on the world of the original, but it's not the same. I mean, it still has its chunks of neo-noir and noir fusion, but it's not the same type of movie. But I would say plot-wise, it's definitely harkens more back to the Final Cut version of it. Like, obviously, there's no voiceover. Like, the voiceover is honestly the biggest problem with the theatrical. Like, the cut of the theatrical, like, the scenes that are in it, the scenes that aren't in it, the scenes that get added versus, like, the test print or the director's cut or the final cut. Change it, but don't change it in a big way. It's really just the voiceover that makes it a totally different movie and a significantly worse movie, I think. But I don't know. You don't need to have seen the original to appreciate this new one, but I think it definitely would deepen your appreciation of it. The problem is it's hard sometimes, like showing Blade Runner. I was trying to explain this to someone the other day. Showing Blade Runner to someone today who's never seen it is a lot like showing that time you show your friend The Matrix who's never seen it or something like that. And they never saw The Matrix when it came out, but they saw the movies that came out after The Matrix, and it doesn't hit them the same way. They're like, oh, I mean, okay. I mean, it was good. I don't understand why you're so... No, you don't understand. In 1999, when this movie came out, like, it, no one had ever done anything like this before. It was game-changing. And so much about what makes Blade Runner special has become, like, it is the DNA of dark sci-fi movies. Like, every dark noir or sci-fi movie that's come out since 1982 owes a debt to Blade Runner, whether it be like almost straight spiritual successor kind of stuff like Dark City or things like Gattaca or even like Westworld, like the big show on HBO right now. Like, all these things owe so much to what Blade Runner did 35 years ago. It's hard for someone to watch it with fresh eyes and not appreciate like how groundbreaking it was and what it did to how much it changed, how seminal it is in the, it is the, you know, metropolis of, you know, the 21st century, even though it came out in the 80s, like it did for sci-fi in the 80s, 90s and 2000s, what Metropolis did for sci-fi forever. You know, I mean, it was, even if you don't appreciate it as a great movie or a great story or a classic movie, you can't downplay like what it meant for every sci-fi movie that has come out since Blade Runner. I don't want to harp on that forever because I could talk about the original Blade Runner for hours, but it makes it tough to make someone watch it. Because if you get too bumped, and I've done it before, like get so like build it up so much, people watch it, it's like, I don't understand why people are obsessing about this movie. And I was like, well, you gotta understand. Think of every sci-fi movie you've ever enjoyed. This movie came out like 20 years before that one. And, you know, this came out in 1982. Like, this changed the world. So, I don't know.
I feel like there's two, if you want to call yourself a fan of sci-fi or you want to see good sci-fi, there's two movies you have to have seen, and that's Metropolis and Blade Runner. I feel like that's it. And one of my favorite things about Blade Runner 2049 is I feel like nowadays, so much sci-fi is just, there's a lot of action to it. It focuses so much on the action. And we knew, it's definitely spoiler free to say, if you've seen Blade Runner, you know, you get that feeling that Blade Runner 2049 is going to have its moments, but it's not going to focus on that. And that was great too. So it's definitely, the pacing's a lot slower than what, you know, like Geostorm's going to bring you in 2 weeks. But it's also a lot better, I'm sure. I've not seen Geostorm yet, but it's a lot better. Adam, no, fall backwards out of your chair there. But it's definitely got that, I don't want to say vintage, but that it's got that true sci-fi feel to it. Like, it's got the
pace. Well, I mean, it's not even the sci-fi-ness of it, because it is sci-fi, but it's that very specific kind of hard sci-fi where they don't explain anything. They just build a world, and it's just, that stuff just is. Like, all the best, like, really hard sci-fi. Like, we're not going to explain all the cool technology or what this thing is or what that thing is. We're just going to build a world and throw you into it. And then it makes it feel so much more lived in when all the really crazy, cool, high-tech stuff is just mundane. Like, that's part of everyone's everyday life. And it built a world. And, like, I don't think you can underplay, even today, how good those effects look for having been done in 82. Because, like, if you think back... Like, the two movies that I always point to people is go back and watch Blade Runner and then go back and watch the special effects in Tron, which was also super groundbreaking, and the special effects in Wrath of Khan, and then appreciate that those two movies came out the same year as Blade Runner. and like look at those special effects side by side, and you're like, oh, this was a little bit ahead of its time. Like, it did some things that we didn't understand.
Yeah, I can one up you there, man. Go look at a movie that I really, really like in Alien 3. Man, if you watch that today, right now, find a Blu-ray copy, put it in, and watch it, and you'll be like, yeah, mid-90s, huh? This is roughly the same time as Jurassic Park. Really? Really? That's what? No. This is bad. Like, it's, and I love that movie, but it's that same kind of thing. And Tyler, I think, you know, your conversation, you're talking about building worlds and just putting people inside of it. I think that's a Ridley Scott hallmark. He did the same thing in Alien, the original Alien, where it's just like, oh, by the way, here's the ship. Here's what these people are doing. And okay, go for it. And we're moving on. And we don't focus on the cool crap that they're doing. It's just, yeah, they're just doing their job. This isn't anything special. Like, this job sucks. And, you know, they all hate it. And it's great. And I think he brought that same thing to Blade Runner in terms of, yeah, this is the world. This is just who they are. This is what they do. And it does feel a lot more authentic, I guess, than explaining every little itty bitty thing about that world.
Well, 20, also,
speaking of, if you are a big sci-fi movie geek, 1982 is a great year for you, and you should always go back and revisit it, because in 1982 you not only got Blade Runner, you got Wrath of Khan and Tron, which I mentioned earlier. You also get the original Thing, the Thing, and you get
we've gone over this exact list before on previous episodes of the
podcast. Have we? You also get E.T. That's
1982.
It's worth doing it again. It's so good.
You get E.T. the Extraterrestrial, and you also get that underappreciated Jim Henson Jim, the Dark Crystal. So go back to 1982 and revisit it. It's worth a look.
Well, I'm trying to focus a little on 2049. Tyler appropriately his 10 minute orgasms he's having over the original.
I'm just saying, I don't feel like we could talk about it that as much as I'd like to with Adam here, and it bothers me. So I just, I'm trying to hold
back. Focusing on the original. So see the original if you haven't, obviously, which I think any of us would have given you that advice even before the sequel was ever announced. But one thing I did want to mention, especially because you were talking about it extensively, what Blade Runner did in terms of special effects and the set and everything like that. One thing I loved about 2049 is it didn't try to say, hey, look, this is 30 years later. We're going to show you how far we've come with all these special effects. It more said, hey, look, this is the world that we created for you 35 years ago, 30 years in the future. And it totally works. And I mean, some of the vehicles have that 80s feel to it, you know, even down to the soundtrack has that 80s feel to it that really captures the original Blade Runner. And I just thought that was so awesome. And I think when we were trying not to talk about it too much this weekend in our messenger group, and I said, it's not a perfect movie, but it's definitely a perfect sequel for Blade Runner. And to do that 30 years later, and most movies strike out when they try to do that a sequel that late. So good things is all.
Don't even have to go that late. Kingdom of the Crystal Skulls wasn't that long after Last Crusade, and oh man, they like it just.
Ouch!
That magic was out of that bottle. They ran out.
yeah. That's for sure. But yeah, I guess next week we will probably go into more extensive conversation about 2049. So we're giving everybody, thanks to Adam, as Adam said, you're welcome already. Thanks to Adam, we're giving all of our listeners an extra week to go see Blade Runner 2049.
Well, I want to know, what did you guys think of the casting? Because I know Robin Wright, always fantastic. I think Ryan Gosling usually does a fantastic job as well. I've heard really good things about David Bautista. So Bautista for wrestling fans, or Drax for people who like Guardians of the Galaxy, like everybody in the world. What did you guys think of all the casting? And I mean, Jared Leto... off of Suicide Squad and all that kind of stuff. Where did that stuff land for you?
Almost everyone in it was really good. I've never been the biggest Jared Leto fan. I think his character was okay. I think it was a little bit overdone, but like I understand what they were trying to do. They're trying to make him this weird carnival mirror image of Tyrell, where Tyrell's like the cold, like, experimenter, like pure scientist, and he's Jared Leto's some, you know, hotshot with a god complex. It's very weird, but his character didn't really work for me a ton. But for one, there are a ton of people in this movie that I didn't even realize were going to be in it, and even like the little small bits are in it. But like, obviously all the big ones, Gosling's fantastic. Robin Wright's really good. Dave Bautista has exactly one scene and is excellent in it. I've now since gone back and watched the short film prequel they did with him. It's real good. It's real good.
You were supposed to link those for me.
Mackenzie Davis, who
you
I've always...
You don't know how to use the internet. You don't mean to do that.
Mackenzie Davis, who I've always had a soft spot for, has a couple scenes that she's pretty solid in. I think the big one, the big like show stealers though, are Ana de Armas as Joy is really good. Sylvia Hooks as Love is just a fantastic villain. Like, she is just menacing and creepy and crazy, and she has a scene with Robin Wright that's just out of this world. But I would say the biggest show stealer is, and I can't really tell you, what's the word I want to say? Like, I don't want to, like, it's not spoiling anything. It's like her character isn't like a big, who she is, but there's a character. Okay. So like in the first one, they talk about like all the replicants have implanted memories. So someone has to make those memories. And at one point in the scene, they go to a lab where there's a doctor who creates memories that get implanted into. And the doctor, the character who plays her is Carla Jury, and she has like two scenes in the whole movie, and they're fantastic. Like, her first scene where Ryan Gosling meets her, it's fucking amazing. It's might be the best scene of the movie.
The way you set that up, I was really worried it was going to go somewhere spoiler direction, but no, she is great. But I think you hit it out of the park and say, yeah, Sylvia, or more accurately, Sylvia Hoeks hit it out of the park, as Love. Fantastic. And Ana de Armas, stole my heart as Joy. Wow. Like, just gorgeous, but she was fantastic too. But even up to Ryan Gosling. Yeah. I mean, Ryan Gosling did fantastic in it. But the thing we've mentioned, Dave Bautista a few times, and yeah, he's not in it for more than 5 minutes. And man, that guy can act. Like, definitely give him credit for it. But, yeah, I always love Robin Wright. We've this season or alone this summer, I guess, during podcasts, we've been happy. We've excitedly talked about her a few times, and yeah, she was fantastic in it as well. But I try to look back at everybody's performances, and I don't think there's one that I would say is bad. There's not one that I would say was even like the weakest link or anything. There might've been stuff that wasn't as good as the others, but Tyler, you're muted.
And there's a lot of little fun characters that show up. Like, Lenny James shows up in a scene where he has like one scene where he's really fun. And Barkhad Abdi, the guy who like, what's the Somali pirate hijacking Tom Hanks movie? The main villain
Captain
there.
I'm
the captain now.
He's the captain now. Yeah.
Barkhad Abdi. He has a scene in the movie, and it's maybe a 3-minute scene, and it's fantastic. He's really good. Do you know which part I'm talking about?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
The fixer smuggler dude. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's all around. Yeah. And Tyler pointed out there's a lot of people you just didn't expect to see. Like, I didn't look at the cast, so I didn't even realize, and we may have discussed it, so I may have just forgot, but I don't remember Robin Wright was going to be in this. And then the first time I see her, I'm like, oh, holy shit, Robin Wright, this is awesome. And so there was a lot of people, yeah, I wasn't ready for. And then there was a couple good cameos from the original one that I wasn't ready for either too. So that was exciting. The casting did great. And as we're pointing out time and time again, even these little roles, which I think goes back to what we're talking about, how they set up even the original Blade Runner, just setting up the world around the main plot was fantastic. So you get all these characters that you only get for a couple minutes in the movie, Like Dave Bautista, you only get for a few minutes, but his story, like you know so much about his character and his story, and you could do so much with what's there. I guess these characters have so much backstory, even though they don't give it to you in the movie. They don't spoon feed you. It's just a few minutes, but really good movie. Yeah. If there's anything I can find negative to say about it is I think it was possibly longer than it needed to be. But at the same time, if I look back at it, I'm like, there's really nothing obvious that I would even cut out though either. So there's one scene that I would cut out that's kind of useless. The second scene with Mackenzie Davis, I don't feel like that was necessary, but it's still,
I don't know. I think it was more just like a show off scene than it was anything. I thought it was, especially the second time around, it's way better. And I was like, wow, it's really impressive. Like it's like of all the shot scenes, it's like, wow, that's impressive.
Oh, what they did as like special effects. Yeah. Is pretty incredible there, but, yeah, definitely see it if you haven't seen it. So I will want to see this again for sure. And this will be a day one buy for me. I'm not even going to question that, but it's Adam, gosh, why haven't you seen it? Just killing us here. Fun fact. So we're talking about Jared Leto's character. I think he did a good job. But when Blade Runner 2049 was first announced, David Bowie was still alive. And that's actually, there's a big article on the Nerdist about how that's who they wanted, for Wallace was David Bowie. And I was like, that would have been super cool. So I don't know, but, I think he did a good job. Everybody did a good job. No negatives there. Soundtrack was great. Movie altogether. And then of course it had a below what was expecting, but beat everything else out about 3-1 at the box office. So not terrible. But we can mention in Fantasy Movie League, Tyler and Adam bet on Blade Runner, and Aaron and I went a different direction, and it paid off for us, and paid off enough that it's actually moved me into second place for the season, just by like 2 million, I think, ahead of Adam, but it's moved me into second place for the season. But Tyler's been gambling big this season and missing on some of those big gambles too. So it's got him a little bit behind there.
To be fair, I am still standing up for the fact that I was the one person who didn't gamble on It Week. That was unforeseen in so many ways, but I definitely did. If Blade Runner had made what was expected of it to make, if it had made its $50 million, I would have won the weekend, but it just fell off. Like after Friday, I was feeling really good. And then by Saturday afternoon, I was like, well, I'm fucked. So, but yeah, Blade Runner fell off a cliff. So I don't know. I don't even know what to put this weekend, like Happy Death Day. Like I think I've seen a couple trailers for it only because I've gone to the movie theater, but I don't know anyone who knows about this movie.
Horror movie coming out on Friday the 13th. I mean, it's hard not to put that in there.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about like a college teen like frat party horror movie that's basic. Like the only description I could give for it, it's Groundhog Day.
Oh yeah, it's 100% Groundhog Day. Yeah,
but with the blonde college co-ed just getting killed every night and then waking back up in some guy's dorm room. Like, yep. I give the movie viewing public way too much credit. Maybe they are exactly as bad as everyone else thinks. Maybe there's a reason Hollywood treats us the way it does. I don't know.
I was going against it as well, but then Adam just pointed out it is Friday the 13th this weekend. So
Friday the 13th in October.
I know. I may have to reset my lineup for this week's Fantasy Movie League, because I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't have it in there. I was looking the other direction. But I think that is our big release of the weekend. Of course, great to do it on a Friday the 13th. The other release is, I think this is its first weekend, is The Foreigner is coming out as well. So Jackie Chan back in theaters, man, it's been a while since we've seen Jackie Chan. So, they're really touting that one up too. They're really like back, Man of Action is back and all that stuff. So, those are, I think, the two key releases for this Friday the 13th weekend. Interested to see how next weekend plays out. See how Blade Runner, Adam saying he believes it's going to have some legs. No real direct competition, obviously, this week, but a couple interesting movies that are could come out and I think spread it a little bit more thin. It could be a good weekend at the box office. I think a lot of temperatures are cooling down across the country for one, but yeah, I think it's going to be a wide, as more of any one movie taking a huge chunk. I think it's going to be a more of a wide weekend where we see a lot. Kind of like we saw this past weekend, like 2 through 5 was only separated by like a couple million, not even. So,
well, what's the next? I mean, this was the closest thing we're going to have.
Geostorm in 2 weeks, dude. Geostorm.
That's the worst thing about having seen Blade Runner twice is I've had to watch that trailer in a theater twice, which was rough.
Yes.
But what's like, so like, obviously like August was a big letdown. I mean, we had the Kingsman sequel, which was kind of a, I mean, like
August
that movie
made
the surprise. What's that?
August or September?
August was bad, and September was also pretty bad comparatively. Like, they've both been pretty rough weeks. Like, what's the next blockbuster? Is it Thor? Is there anything between now and Thor?
Nothing huge in October, obviously, besides Geostorm, but. November, yeah, what, November 3rd is that Friday or whatever, is Thor. So, which, another big topic there, this past weekend was the first weekend that critics were able to get in and check it out, and a home run, supposedly.
Did you see the Roman J. Israel Esquire trailer at the beginning of yours? The Denzel Washington one where he plays the lawyer?
Yeah.
You saw that trailer?
Yes.
So I'd never heard of that movie before. It comes out the same weekend as Thor.
Does it? Well, that's why we haven't heard of it, because that's an interesting weekend to come out.
I look up trailers and watch trailers. Like, you called out McDonough's new film. Like, I watched that trailer like a year and a half ago. Like, I keep up on this stuff. I had never heard of this movie before, and then I saw a trailer 2 nights ago, and it comes out in like 3 weeks. It stars Denzel Washington, Colin Farrell, and is directed by Dan Gilroy. And I had never heard of it before.
No, this is the first time I saw it, the trailer as well, and had not heard of it. And I don't think it's going to be hurting too bad coming out the same weekend as Thor, because it's definitely targeting the award season as opposed to the big blockbuster season. But yeah, no, that was the first time I saw the trailer for it as well.
And I thought that if it's coming out that soon and it's being directed by, it's the second movie this guy's directed since he made Nightcrawler. Like, people would have pushed it a little bit more that I would have heard of it. You got Denzel Washington and Colin Farrell in a movie directed like the second time, the first time out since Nightcrawler for Dan Gilroy, and I literally never heard of it. And you're opening it against a Marvel movie. I don't know. Maybe that's just me. But yeah, is there anything between, I guess, isn't the newest, like, isn't Saw 14 in October?
You get Jigsaw, it'll make its money. It'll just keep chugging along.
Is that like a Halloween weekend kind of thing?
I actually think it's the 23rd, or 22nd next weekend, whatever day 20th. That ends up being.
20th.
Yeah, that one.
It's 27th, it looks like.
Oh, is it the 27th? Okay.
It is Halloween.
Okay, why didn't anyone tell me they're making Boo 2, a Madea Halloween? Why didn't I not know about this?
You're the one who saw the trailer research. You just said it.
I bet it also makes its money, though. Like, I wouldn't be shocked if either of those movies walked away with $20 million that weekend.
Tyler Perry has fallen off some, but he still has. Yeah, he still gets some money
there. He's got his audience. I mean, people still are going to go see every movie he makes. Jigsaw weekend is Suburbicon, which I want to see, but the reviews for it have not been kind. I'm going to go see it, but.
Yeah, so the next blockbuster is Thor. And again, as I've tried to say, as I've brought it up a couple times, but Tyler likes to go his own direction, is the reviews, or the early reviews for it, have been very favorable. A lot of positive things about it. And the comedy is what everybody's kind of focusing on. It's supposed to be really good. Putting it in with the directors, What We Do in the Shadows, Hunt for the Wilder People, and then, of course, saying it's in the realm of Guardians of the Galaxy when comparing it to another Marvel movie. So, good company for it, which can compare it to. I know, I can't think of the director's name right now. What's Tyler knows?
What are we talking about?
The Thor director. Thanks for paying attention.
Taika Waititi.
Thank you, Taika Waititi. So yeah, he's definitely looked into it, got some comedy moving for this Thor, which is good because the Dark World just was not a great Marvel movie. And I know, Adam, I believe you're the one that disagrees with us on this.
Dude, I really like that movie. I actually think, and I was going to ask you, with the reviews that it's gotten so far, do you think there any bit of... It's the internet, so there will be some. Do you think it hurts the movie that there will be some probable internet backlash that it's trying to be Guardians of the Galaxy and that we are losing out on what the Thor movies brought to the Marvel Universe, which was a little bit more of a I don't want to say darker because I don't really think that was it. They had
Shakespearean
comedy and all in both movies. Yeah, with Kenneth Branagh directing the first one, right?
Yeah, so, Kenneth Branagh did the first
one. I mean, do they miss out on any of that? Like, is that do you guys think there will be blowback because of it, or is it going to be good enough
I think you'll get a little bit of both, because when it's all said and done, outside of his work with the Avengers, like I think a lot of the Thor comics, at least in the Marvel, like in the real comic book universe, always inhabited that kind of weird, they weren't full on the cosmic universe, because the cosmic universe was always its own thing, and those were always weird with Guardians and Nova Corps and all that weird Adam Warlock and all that weird cosmic stuff. But most of the Thor comics were super weird and out there and kind of creepy and strange. And I think it's kind of fun that like they're actually kind of doing that. Like Thor is in that vein of like the cosmic ones are going to be all weird and crazy and out here, and then the Earth ones will be a little bit more grounded. But I don't know. I don't care. They can do whatever they want as long as they keep making watchable good movies. So I don't know. I'm sure there'll be some, but at least it's not as on the nose as like you know, the recuts or the trailer for Suicide Squad after Guardians of the Galaxy made $1 million. I mean, all the money. So, or it's not as going to be as bad as every new trailer for the Justice League that, like, don't get me wrong. I don't want to devalue her because she's fantastic and the movie was good, but every trailer that has come out for Justice League post Wonder Woman has watched exactly like, hey, you guys like Wonder Woman? I heard you guys like Wonder Woman. Look how much Wonder Woman we have in this movie. This Wonder Woman's in this movie. I know you guys like Wonder Woman. You'll like this movie because you like Wonder Woman. Come watch our movie. It's got Wonder Woman in it. Do you guys know about Wonder Woman? I've heard you guys like Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman's in this movie. Let's show you how much Wonder Woman we have in this movie. It's a lot of Wonder Woman. You should watch this movie.
So besides the Star Wars trailer this week, we also got the Justice League trailer out of New York City or New York Comic Con, which Tyler brings up a really good point, the Wonder Woman thing. But also, yeah, man, I was kind of hoping, I'm like, I'm going to watch this trailer again, even though this is like the, 20th trailer now for the Justice League, it feels like. And as the DC Extended Universe gives you trailer after trailer of their movies, like you pretty much, if you just piece together the trailers, you don't have to buy a movie ticket, basically.
Right. When does this movie come out? I feel like it's still not due to come out to like 2019 or something right. like that. No.
Yeah, it comes out like the week before November. I mean, the week before Thanksgiving. So
this is first trailer post Whedon kind of taking in a lot of steps. So I was hopeful we'd see something different.
I mean, you can definitely feel Whedon in this one. Like
you can,
but the jokes are cranked up a little bit.
But it's still not, yeah, it's definitely gotten out of the, like, we're super serious, guys. Like, it's gotten away from that a little bit. And they tried to show a little bit more of it, and really with Aquaman and The Flash trying to show their comical side of things. But
this trailer showed
me. I'm still not feeling it.
Oh, I'm not feeling it at all. But the trailer showed me three things. One was, guys, Wonder Woman's in this movie. I don't know if you know about it, but I heard you guys like Wonder Woman. We got Wonder Woman. This trailer, which is fine. Like, it was a really good movie, and she's fantastic, but. Like, maybe give some screen time to, like, the 12 new characters you're adding to the universe without a standalone movie that maybe you're not going to have time to develop because you have 12 fucking characters in this movie. Especially Cyborg, who no one who's ever not watched Teen Titans even has a clue who he is. But fine. Do what you do. You're DC. It also said that we got jokes. It doubled down on we got jokes. They're not very good jokes, but we got jokes. except for Alfred. Alfred's jokes are all good, but everyone else is terrible. And it also said, you thought we murdered up Batman in the Superman movie? Look how many fucking guns he has now. Like, every scene that Batman is in, he's got some big-ass cannon on his thing, and he's just blowing shit up.
He's driving an armored tank.
And, then it's not like the little machine guns pop out, like, from the Nolan to, like, take down the support of a bridge. It's a full-on, like, tank, like, 20 mil. I mean, it's like a full-on, like, 200-millimeter cannon, like, shooting shells into, like, a building full of people. Like, Batman's just got guns for days. Like, that's all Batman does. There's no scenes of Batman, like, punching a person or using a grappling hook or a batarang, but there's about 12 scenes of Batman shooting some shit with a big fucking gun.
It's a very true story, but we have to remember, Batman and Superman, they don't kill people. These are aliens or some kind of alien invasion. So it's acceptable because they're not killing people. There's no murder here if it's an alien race. So... but yeah, it's essentially, and it's not, you point out, it's like, for Batman fans that know The Dark Knight Returns, he's got a tank, essentially. But it's more of an armored protection vehicle. And this one, it's like, God, like, Tyler got really excited in expressing those guns, and it's still not getting the point across about how many and how big guns are. Like, it's insane what they're doing.
Well, and it's not even, it's never the same gun. Like, there is at least 5 shots in the trailer of something that belongs to Batman firing a gun at something, and it's a different gun every time, or a different vehicle. Like, there's just guns everywhere. And apparently Batman is now Gunman, and that's what he does. Because he's old and decrepit and can't, he's not a detective and can't punch anyone anymore, so he just shoots everyone. And their dog and the building they're in and everything. Like, he just leaves craters. He is scorched earth Batman now.
It's brutal. And they're definitely not, I mean, everybody knew Superman was going to be in it, but they're definitely not even pretending anymore that he's not. He's in the trailer. So, and I get it's a flashback scene.
They did that well. Like, they found a way to put him in there without putting him in there, which was okay.
But
I was okay with that. I was totally 100% on board with the way that they did that. Because you see him, and then it's obviously a dream that Lois is having. I'm fine with it. So how does he show up? Does he, like, come back to life? Do they, like, wake him up? Does the aliens wake him up? Or are they going to go full on Flashpoint? It's like Flash can, like, go back in time and bring him to the future alive or some shit.
Oh, no. Well, first of all, the Flash movie that they're talking about in the future is supposed to be Flashpoint storyline. So please don't introduce it too early here, because you were talking about it being a mess of trying to introduce all these characters. Now explain to an audience that hasn't read a DC comic the Flashpoint paradox and tell us how you're going to get that across as well in a movie this full of stuff. But I feel like,
I don't know, they already introduced the Flashpoint paradox in fucking Batman versus Superman
with the dream within a dream
that no one understood.
I get it. See, it's already confused people. So don't even go full on here. But I feel like it's going to be totally, totally easy for DC. They're just going to say, whoop, climax. This team's getting outgunned right now by this alien race. We're at the big point in the movie. What's going to happen? All of a sudden, boom, Superman's here. He's going to save the day. And I feel like it's just going to go that easy for it's DC. It's just going to go that simple. And I don't know. He'll come in and save the day. Maybe somebody yells Martha a little too loud. I don't know. But it just wakes him up from the grave, you know.
Why did you say that name?
He comes and grabs one of the aliens. He's like, why did you say that name? So him and Batman beat the shit out of the same alien that said Martha like too many times. So anyways, we've actually, because it's been such an exciting episode, filled, we actually spent a lot of time on Blade Runner. We've hit our time already. I feel like we've only been talking for about 15 minutes, but we are pretty much at our time. Just enough time for some final thoughts. So Adam or Tyler, do one of you want to get us started with a closing session here?
Go see Blade Runner 2049. And then if you get a chance, go see it again. For no other reason, it is quite possibly one of the most beautifully shot movies I've seen in a really, really long time. Like, you've heard me, if you've listened to the podcast before, you've heard me talk about my love for Roger Deakins. I won't go so far as to say this is the best movie he's ever shot, because he's an amazing cinematographer, but this is probably going to be the one he finally wins the Oscar for, because it's really good. Like, his color palettes, his lensing, it's just, it's on another level. Second of all, I just finished a new book last night. Anne Leckie, who I've talked about before, she got nominated for a couple of Hugos for her Ancillary series, Ancillary Justice, and those books. Had a new one come out a couple weeks ago called Provenance that takes place in the same world with brand new characters. I just finished last night. It's really good. So if you're a sci-fi fan, if you like Anne Leckie, pick up her new book, Provenance, and go see Blade Runner 2049. That's it.
Yeah, I'm going to back you on the cinematography there. It's in the trailer, so it won't even be a spoiler, but that scene with kind of the orange glow where you get in the back of Ryan Gosling, I think it's like one of the most beautiful scenes I've seen in a movie for a while. So, all right.
There's color palettes all over the place. It's fantastic. Like every frame of the film could be framed and hung on a wall as a piece.
Adam, why have you not seen this yet? All right, Adam, what do you got for us?
Go see Blade Runner 2049 if you want to. I'm going to. Got the date night all planned with the wife, dinner and a movie. It's going to be amazing. Let's see. I don't know. My final thought's going to be real weird. Today, Tuesday, when we're recording, sorry, everybody who listens to it on Friday and thinks that we're recording live, we're not. Tuesday, the U.S. failed to qualify for the World Cup in 2018. We have embarrassed our people and our ancestors and our fans.
They didn't fail yet, because as long as we've got
games played at the same time, we're out.
Okay,
yeah. Never mind. That can't happen. The last weekend, so
they lost.
It's not even that we
beat Tobago, and then Panama beat Mexico.
Panama beat Mexico. I thought it was going to be like Honduras or somebody that like snuck in there.
Nope.
Yeah. Not only that, but like after the finally kind of showing up with our last game, we lost to the team that had like 3 points in the pool up until this game.
Yeah.
And just shit the bed.
It's a small island country of 1.3 million people, which for some frame of reference is less than half the size of the Tampa Bay area in general. So anyone who's ever been to Tampa Bay, cut that in half. And that's the number of people that just beat our 330 million people country. And so I'm a little upset about that. And then it is Iron Banner week in Destiny 2. So if you guys have Destiny 2, hop on, play some Iron Banner. It's pretty fun. Good reward so far from the packages from Iron Banner. So I've been pleased.
All right. I guess, I don't know. MTV did something. Combing the Nerdist for some content, I came across AHA's had a MTV Unplugged session for 2017. So I guess MTV still does Unplugged, but it's AHA and a 2017 Unplugged session. And they do an acoustic version of Take On Me, which is absolutely beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful.
Did they do just that one song for like an hour? Like
I don't know. They show the audience a ton in the video clip that you can find on Nerdist or you can find on Vevo. But they show the audience a ton, and everybody, of course, is singing it. There's women in tears singing it, like it's obvious. I mean, that's one of the best songs from the 80s, clearly. And it's got this acoustic version, and it's fantastic. It just works perfectly. And so if you got a couple minutes to listen to what is one of the best 80s songs, or one of the best songs ever, Take On Me, you want to hear it in acoustic style. Maybe you're getting married and you want to throw it in your wedding and you thought, man, it's a little too upbeat to be our song to dance to at the wedding. Now you got a version of it. Now you got a version of it that's going to work. So check that out. One thing I'll add, I'm late to the game. So Tyler and I were talking about it a little bit earlier. I started about a week and a half ago watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine. I've made it through 3 seasons, which, yes, there are about 23 episodes per season. So I've watched a lot of TV the past couple weeks. I even skipped a night out where I was supposed to go. So sorry for friends that were doing the zombie thing. I stayed in and watched Brooklyn Nine-Nine. But it's fantastic. I don't know why I haven't watched this before. The new season's on started. It's caused me. I was going to cancel Hulu tomorrow when my trial's up. And now I'm going to keep it because I'm going to watch the rest of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. And it's fantastic. I love all the characters and it's very funny. So if you were like me and somehow slept on that show, go check it out. I definitely highly recommend it. So other than that, we are done for episode 142, The Intervention. Adam is going, by the end of this episode, we have confirmation from Adam that he's already got his night plan to go see Blade Runner, and that he's probably going to see Star Wars on Thursday night as well. So I think Tyler and I did our jobs here. We did our jobs here, and this intervention we can call success. But with that, we're going to wrap up till episode 143, which hopefully you've had a chance to see Blade Runner by then, because we're definitely going to dive deeper into that movie, because nothing else this week that's going to take us away from it. So we'll see. But Blade Runner 2049 next week, your homework is to go check it out if you haven't. Of course, leave us feedback. At this point, spoiler-free, obviously, in our comments if you have checked it out, as well as what you thought about the Justice League Star Wars trailers. And, of course, we always, you know, we've invited some of y'all to play Fantasy Movie League, but if y'all are playing in your own leagues, we want to hear who's destroying who. So it's fantasy football season, so let's make it Fantasy Movie League season as well. So with that, we bid you adieu. Tell us, same nerd time, same nerd channel. Catch you next week.